Assassin.
You know I break necks, call me Jack Tate. I have no regrets while your life is fading. I'm a crazy fuck equivalent to Satan. When I'm behind the mic, I feel like the greatest. You know I break necks, call me Jack Tate. I have no regrets while your life is fading. I'm a crazy fuck equivalent to Satan. When I'm behind the mic, I feel like the greatest.
What up, y'all? You're listening to Sports Talk with Trop, and I'm your host, Katie Trop. But before we get started, I would like to let y'all know, if you happen to be in the Austin area tomorrow, Saturday, June 11th to be exact, there's going to be a little hip-hop festival at the Texas Music River Ranch, and I will be performing at it, but there will be 50 hip-hop artists. I go on at 1:20, but the festivities begin at, I think everything kicks off at 9 a.m., performances to begin at 10 a.m., and then it goes all the way until, I believe, 2 a.m. So, yeah, I go on at 1:20. If you want to come out, it's a free event. Parking is $10. That's the only thing. There will be food carts and a bunch of vendors on hand. So it's going to be a cool little event out here in Austin. So if you happen to be in the area, you should come kick it with us. And have a good time, even though it's going to be hot as fuck. But hey, guess what? It's summertime in Texas. It's always hot as fuck. So, and I know nobody wants to be cooped up inside anymore. We've been cooped up inside for the last 2 fucking years. So let's all get out and have a good time. So if you're in the Austin area, you ain't got shit to do tomorrow, come kick it with us at the Hip Hop Festival, the Bars, Jars, and Cigars Festival. And everything kicks off at 9 a.m. All right, so let's get started on the NBA Finals. Game 3 was on Wednesday night. Boston dominated this game. They ended up winning 116-100. So they are now up on the series 2-1 over the Golden State Warriors. Overall, the game was pretty much dominated by Boston from start to finish. There was a point in the second half where Golden State kind of started to make a run. But it wasn't, you could just kind of tell they weren't getting it going. Boston just absolutely dominated on the boards. And that's the way Boston's going to win this series. If they have any chance of winning a title, it's going to be they need to own the Golden State Warriors on the boards. Because, the Warriors, they're a good team. But they're not they're really not that physical of a team. Other than Draymond Green, he's pretty much really their only really physical player. But other than that, they're a very finesse team, and they're pretty much just built upon scoring. Whereas the Boston Celtics, they're a very complete team. And they're, like I've said for months now, is they're great defensively, but also on those boards, offensively and defensively, they are just taking it to the Golden State Warriors. And they did dominate Game 3. And so Game 4 is going to be tonight in Boston. Steph Curry, he did get injured at the in the fourth quarter of the last game, but it turns out that it's nothing serious. He's expected to play his normal allotted amount of time, and he should have no restrictions going into tonight's game. I expect the Golden State Warriors to bounce back from Game 3 and tie this series up, just because they've got championship pedigree. They know what it takes. They're being pushed to the brink right now. They go down 3-1. That's definitely not a good space to be, even though it's happened to them where they've been up 3-1 and the Cavaliers end up winning that championship. So who knows? I do think Golden State's going to bounce back tonight and tie the series up. I mean, really, the last game, Game 3, was really their only bad game. I mean, they did lose Game 1, but they didn't have a bad game. Game 3, they got absolutely dominated, and I think they're going to come back tonight, and I think they're going to get the win. So Game 4 is tonight. All right, and then moving on to the NHL Stanley Cup playoffs, the Colorado Avalanche, they ended up sweeping the Edmonton Oilers and are just awaiting their next opponent for the right to win the Stanley Cup. When the playoffs began, because like I said, I'm not a huge hockey fan, so I just kind of looked at the stats, just kind of looked to see how team seasons went, their players and so forth. And I really, from the start, thought the Colorado Avalanche were 100% the best team going into the Stanley Cup playoffs. And I really wasn't going to pick against them. It's just I really liked what I saw from the Oilers in the last round, and they seemed like they were going to come into this one and at least make it a series. But no, the Avalanche are rolling along. So honestly, I don't think it matters who goes up against the Avalanche for the Stanley Cup. I think they're going to win that shit easy. They're waiting for their opponent, and that's either going to be the Tampa Bay Lightning or the New York Rangers. And right now, the Lightning are up on that series 3-2. So they could close it out here this weekend and end up in the Stanley Cup playoffs. But also the Rangers are playing some excellent hockey right now. So we'll see what happens, who the Avalanche are going to end up facing. But I don't think it really matters at this rate because the Avalanche are just a damn good team. All right. So moving on to the college baseball super regionals. They begin this weekend. Actually, currently I have the Longhorns playing on my TV right now. They're playing East Carolina. And they're down 7-5 in the bottom of the seventh inning. They just got on a little run there. They were down like 7-2 at one point, but now the Longhorns are kind of making a run. This is best of three, each one of these matchups. And so they're going to have games Friday, Saturday, and then Sunday if necessary, of course. So obviously I just discussed Texas versus East Carolina. I'm of course taking Texas in this one, not just because they're my favorite team, but also they're a damn good baseball team. And I think they've got what it takes to win in this best of three. Then you also have Tennessee versus Notre Dame. I'm taking Tennessee in that one just because Tennessee is the best team in college baseball. And until proven otherwise, I'm not picking against them, including if they end up playing my Longhorns in the next round. Then you have Texas A&M versus Louisville. I've got A&M moving in that matchup. The Texas A&M is actually a very underrated baseball team. And Louisville, they've had an excellent season, but I'm going to go with the upset in this one and take Texas A&M. And then the last matchup on this side of the bracket is Oklahoma versus Virginia Tech. It's not in me to ever pick the Sooners, so I'm taking Virginia Tech just out of pure, absolute hatred for Oklahoma. And then on the opposite side of the bracket, we've got Stanford versus UConn. I'm going to take Stanford in that matchup just because Stanford has been one of the best teams in college baseball this season. Then you've got North Carolina versus Arkansas. I'm going to go with North Carolina in that matchup. Then you have Ole Miss versus Southern Miss. I'm going to take Southern Miss in this one. Really no particular reason. I just went with them. And then last matchup is Auburn versus Oregon State. I went with Oregon State just because they are a really good college baseball team. So I went with them. And so we'll see how things pan out in the Super Regionals this weekend in college baseball. Basically, all these teams are playing for the right to go to the first round of the College World Series, which would be next weekend. And so that's what they're playing for right now. And Longhorns still down 7-5 in their matchup currently in game one of against East Carolina. All right, and then moving on to pro baseball. We had some things happen this week. On Monday night, the New York Mets, they just keep on rolling. And a player I kind of wanted everybody to watch out for before the season started has really been tearing it up. And not a lot of people are talking about him, but that's because he's not the ace on the team. But that's Carlos Carrasco of the Mets. You know, like I said, he was a very promising young pitcher when he was with the Indians. And then this year he signed with the Mets as a free agent, and he's actually panned out really well for them. He's had a solid season, and just on Monday night he had 10 strikeouts. And so he's really turned it on. He's really had a spectacular season, at least so far. That was a big pickup by the Mets. But then also in that exact same game, Escobar, he hit for the cycle. So the Mets, they just are playing some excellent baseball, all around team baseball, and it's going to be interesting to see if they're able to keep this up throughout the rest of the season. Then on Tuesday, the Los Angeles Angels ended up firing their manager, Joe Maddon. So he is the second manager who has been shit-canned this year already. We had Joe Girardi about a week ago with the Phillies, and then now Joe Maddon, who actually is a solid manager. But the Angels were on a 12-game losing streak. They had just lost the night before, the day before he was fired. So You know, it's when you have that long of a losing streak, which actually ended up going 14 losses in a row, which is just, I think it ended up being a record for the Los Angeles Angels, which is not a record you ever want, especially with such a good team that they have, which is really the only reason why I believe Joe Maddon was fired, just because they do have a stacked team. There really is no reason why the Angels should be on a 12-game losing streak. And they were, and they just weren't getting it going. And so no more Joe Maddon for the Angels. So we'll see how that pans out for the rest of their season. Then on that Tuesday night, Acuna for the Braves, man, he has been getting healthier and healthier each and every game. And he ended up hitting 2 home runs on Tuesday night. And he's been on fire, too. He's been the last, I want to say, like two and a half weeks. Acuna just keeps getting better and better. So you really got to watch out for the Braves. While they started off the season very slow, and it didn't look like they were going to be able to repeat, the baseball season is very long, and things change at a moment's notice. And if a team starts getting hot and starts getting healthy, which is what's going on with the Braves, I think you really got to watch out for them come playoff time. And they're getting hot at the right time. So Acuna had 2 home runs. And then Jazz Chisholm, of the second baseman of the Miami Marlins, he had an amazing game. He ended up hitting 2 home runs, and one of those home runs ended up being a grand slam. He ended up having 7 RBIs for that night. And so he just had an amazing breakout night. Because he's also been coming back from injury. He started the season off on the injured list. He's been a promising young star as well. And they really had high expectations coming into the season, and he really hasn't lived up to them. But he's really heated up the last couple of weeks also. And so, especially since he came off the injured list not too long ago as well. But that was a big night for him. Then also on Tuesday, Justin Verlander, he still continues to dominate. He had 12 strikeouts on Tuesday night. He was the first pitcher to reach 7 wins this season. But he also passed Max Scherzer, who's currently with the Mets, as the current active strikeout leader in the league. And that's not shocking, because both these guys, they both were on the Detroit Tigers on the same team at one point. And so they both dominated with the Tigers for a long time. Then the Tigers ended up trading Verlander to the Astros, and then they also traded Scherzer probably like a year or two later. They traded him to the Nationals, and then so they both had great careers with both those teams. You know, Verlander's won a World Series with the Astros. Scherzer was like the reason why the Nationals won a World Series a few years ago so he was the leader there. So to see that the two of them are basically trading strikeouts back and forth as the active leaders is no shock, because these guys have dominated the league since they came into the league. Really, the only thing that stops them are injuries. And even at that, Verlander was out like a freaking year and a half, and the dude is just straight dominating. So congrats to Justin Verlander. And then also Marcus Semien of the Texas Rangers. He actually has had a very quiet season, but on Tuesday night he seemed to really bust out, and in a doubleheader that they had, and he ended up having 7 hits with 3 home runs in two games, and so he's really panning out for the Rangers, and he had a big night. Then on Thursday, the Angels finally ended their losing streak at 14, ended up getting a win. Shohei Ohtani had a great game last night. He was basically the reason why, pitching-wise, that they ended up getting the win finally. So we'll see what happens with the Angels. It's really difficult to recover from those type of losing streaks. Usually when you have that type of losing streak, even though, like I said, baseball season is long, but usually when you have that long of a losing streak, it doesn't pan out well for you for the rest of the season. So we'll see what happens with them. Also this week, the Yankees, they became the first team to get to 40 wins this season. They're currently at 41. But they continue to dominate. Aaron Judge, he still leads the league with 22 home runs. He continues to dominate. The Yankees, man, I don't know how they're going to be stopped. I think the only thing that could stop the Yankees right now at this point would be injuries. And so far, they've been able to overcome the injuries that they've had so far. All right, and then a little bit of NFL news this week. Actually, all the mandatory mini camps began this week. And really the only drama that happened with minicamp was because, hell, Kyler Murray showed up for the Cardinals and Deebo Samuel showed up for the Niners. So even guys who are kind of having contract disputes right now, they ended up showing up to the mandatory minicamps. But all except for DK Metcalf, the wide receiver up in Seattle with the Seattle Seahawks, he ended up skipping mandatory training camp because apparently he wants a new deal. So that was really the only big news there. But then also Cooper Kupp, the Los Angeles Rams standout wide receiver, he just signed an extension this week, a $75 million extension, which totals out to $110 million. $75 million of it is guaranteed money. So good for you, Cooper Kupp, just coming off of the heels of Aaron Donald getting his big extension. And also, I think this puts Kupp over the $20 million mark a year. So I think he's going to be making like something like $22 million this year. So good for him and Aaron Donald, and good for the Rams that you could keep all these stellar players that you you keep acquiring and you continue to win. It would be nice if the Cowboys could do something like that. But then also in NFL news this week, the Denver Broncos, they were sold for $4.65 billion to the Walmart heir, one of the Walmart heirs. And, yeah, man, $4.65 billion for the Broncos. So, that's obviously if you are able to buy any sports franchise, that's probably the best investment a wealthy person could ever invest in. And so, yeah, I'm not surprised that, one of the Waltons ended up, taking ownership in some team. And, the Broncos, they're a great organization. They have a great history. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens under new ownership here. And in kind of NFL news, but it's news that I've been talking about the last couple of episodes especially, is I guess he kind of deserves his own theme song at this point, is the Dick Dangling Deshaun. Oh, man, the Dick Dangler, he just every day just keeps getting worse for this dude. And like I said, this is why, when something like this happens to you, if you're wealthy or rich or of any type of celebrity, usually when they pay you off quick is because they know that the further you dig, the worse it gets. And for Deshaun, it literally just gets worse, especially over the last, like, I want to say 3 weeks. It just keeps getting worse and worse. And this week, the New York Times released an article basically kind of detailing a bunch of other stuff that's gone on with Deshaun Watson and how many massage therapists he's reached out to over the years, around that time period, as a matter of fact. Like I said, his lawyer said that dumb shit last week, and now he's got another civil lawsuit on hand. So it's just getting worse and worse for this dude. And it's also getting more difficult for the NFL to not do something about this. They've said they're going to come to whatever conclusion they come to before this season begins. So we should know. But this fallout actually is really bad for him because this new civil suit, apparently he either didn't know about it or lied about it, which, either case, it wouldn't be shocking because really there are so many lies that Deshaun Watson himself has told about this whole entire thing, but also his lawyers and, reading depositions and all that stuff. But basically in this, this new lawsuit, he didn't really tell the NFL or the Browns. They didn't know about it. So that's going to be kind of adding a little bit of extra fire to this, this already out of control fire. But also something of interest in that New York Times article was that Deshaun caught in yet another lie, because in his deposition he did say that the Houston Texans did not know about any of this. Well, it turns out that the Houston Texans not only knew that he was seeking out massages from other people, but that apparently during a massage therapy session, something happened, And one of the massage therapists in a text message said, I could expose you basically for what he's doing, because obviously he's been doing this to many people for quite some time now. And I can imagine what the actual numbers are, because when you hear real numbers that they're giving you, you know, like the 24 civil suits. And then before that, you know, before they released that, he's actually reached out to a total of 66 over the last year or two, or in that time period. There's going to be even more than that. So, I mean, really, there's probably in the hundreds, which is just ridiculous, in my opinion, especially if you're an athlete. Because, I mean, yeah, it's easy to say I'm an athlete and I just need massages. But we all know, especially in this day and age, athletes know their body is their temple. It's their moneymaker. And usually if you have a massage therapist, you might have maybe one to three max, you know, like one main one, maybe a second backup, and then maybe a third backup on the off chance the other two can't do it. But come on now, that like 66, come on now. But anyways, the Texans, when he showed that, apparently he showed them this text message that it looked like somebody was going to blow a whistle that he is harassing massage therapists. The Texans not only were providing him with hotel rooms for this, but they were also, after that instance, providing him with non-disclosure agreements for massage therapists to sign. So they basically were encouraging the behavior as well. So Deshaun Watson really is caught in a lie in his own deposition, because he said the Texans did not know. Apparently they did know. And not only did they know, but now it looks like they might end up getting dragged into this lawsuit as well. So we'll see what happens there. It seems that every time I have a new show that there's even further fallout for Deshaun Watson, in this case, and it's going to be, interesting to see what else comes out, because, usually in the case of, you know, investigative reporting, or especially like in the New York Times case, they don't usually just have one story. They're probably going to do a rollout here, probably weekly, until they're done with whatever their stories they have. But I wouldn't be shocked if more stories come out. I wouldn't be shocked if more lawsuits begin. And it's going to be interesting to see how the NFL handles his suspension. And it's going to be hilarious at the same time, because this is happening to the Cleveland Browns, who are just an absolutely atrocious organization, who have never been able to win anything. And when it looked like they had a little bit of glimmer of hope, like they're finally climbing the hill and we might actually be a decent team, it looks like it's going to get blown to smithereens, because they went with Deshaun Watson. They traded for him. They gave him a huge contract. And, yeah, we'll see what happens with that. But they may not even get him to play at all this season. Or he's going to miss some time. I guarantee you the dude's going to be missing some time. So we'll see if this return on investment works out for the Cleveland Browns. But judging by the Cleveland Browns' history, it's not going to work out for them. All right, now let's move on to this week's Top 5 list. You know, I'm a huge fan of Draymond Green. A lot of people like to call him a dirty player. I mean, I guess in terms of NBA dirty player, I guess he is a dirty player. He likes to, you know, throw elbows. He has been known to punch some dudes in the nuts. He likes to jaw in your ears. He gets tons of technical fouls. And when I refer to a dirty player in the league, in sports in general, that's not a diss. That's actually a compliment. Because let's all keep it real. I know we're supposed to act like none of us like the big hits in the NFL, and none of us like the mean grittiness and them calling each other horrible names on the court and the field. I know we like to pretend that doesn't go on, and we're not supposed to encourage that and like that, but I'm sorry, y'all. Sports fans actually do like that shit. And dirty players, if you're a real sports fan, we fucking love dirty players. From any sport, too. I mean, real talk, What is the number one thing we're all looking for when we're watching boxing or UFC? We all fucking love the hardcore knockout. And not just a little knockout. Like, we love to see a motherfucker just be seeing stars on their way down and just get knocked the fuck out. Everybody loves a knockout. And guess what? Knockouts aren't good for boxers and UFC fighters really in the long run. I mean, come on. But we all love it. That's what sports is all about. Seeing a bunch of people go at it and push their bodies to the brink and take shit to the next level. And sometimes shit gets emotional on the court, on the field, whatever sport you play, shit gets real. And dirty players, they are necessary in all sports. And in the NBA in particular, I have quite a few of my favorite dirty players. And I mean, like back in the day when Kobe and Rajah Bell, they used to go back at it in the early 2000s. They used to just go back and forth, and their dirtiness wasn't like where you're fearing for their life, but like they used to do fucked up shit to each other, and they used to jaw in each other's ears, and I can't even imagine what they were saying to each other. I'm sure it wasn't anything nice. I'm sure people would be very appalled and, oh my God, we need an apology for if anybody heard what they were saying. But so dirty players to me is a compliment. I know all sports fans, we like to see that shit. Even though, like I said, the media these days likes to act like we're not supposed to cheer on, like when you're watching football and a dude launches into the air and just completely obliterates a dude. A cornerback jumps in the air, completely obliterates a wide receiver. People act like, oh my God, I hope he's okay. No, we're all cheering that on. Yes, we hope he's okay. We don't want him to be dead, but I'm sorry, y'all. We're looking for that shit. And so in honor of Draymond Green, being a, quote, dirty player, I decided to do the top five dirtiest NBA players of all time. And before I get started on my list, I thought it was very odd because usually before I do these kind of things, I like to Google and see what other lists people had. And so dirtiest players is a list done by quite a few different sports reporting sites. And it was very weird to me because there was an overall consensus number one who doesn't make my top five, because when I think of dirty player, I do not think of this guy. The reason why they put him number one is for stupid, ticky-tacky, I'm a crybaby loser reasons, in my opinion. And that's the old San Antonio Spurs player, Bruce Bowen. He was an amazing defender, amazing three-point shooter. And he, apparently what made him so dirty is that lots of times, he would, when a jump shooter's jumping in the air, he would put his feet underneath theirs, and it does fuck up your ankles, feet, whatever. That's the whole point of it, yes, but I'm sorry. That to me does not make him number one on the dirtiest players list. He didn't even make my top five. As a matter of fact, like when I was first thought of the list and started just thinking of guys offhand, Bruce Bowen didn't come to mind. And then when I saw he was number one on multiple lists, I'm like, what am I missing here? Bruce Bowen? Apparently we have a lot of Bruce Bowen haters out there. And I'm like, what? And by the way, I respected the hell out of Bruce Bowen. I actually enjoyed Bruce Bowen's career. That dude was a beast, but he would not make my top five dirtiest NBA players. He might make like a San Antonio Spurs legends list or something like that. But he definitely does not come near my dirtiest players list, especially with these top five I got here. So let's start it off. Number five on my top five dirtiest NBA players, Charles Oakley. He was mostly known as a New York Knick, and his nickname was the Enforcer. And this dude, he loved being dirty. When you called him a dirty player, he wore that shit like a badge of honor. And if he needed to get in there and do the dirty work, he was going to do it. And he would just throw them bows. And he would just fuck a motherfucker up in the paint. If you came into the paint, you best know Charles Oakley's going to be there. He was called the Oak Tree as well. That was another one of his nicknames, the Oak Tree, because he was so fucking big. You best be getting out of his way, because he's going to fuck your ass up. So I got number five, Charles Oakley. Number four on my top five dirtiest NBA players of all time list, Ron Artest, also known as Meta World Peace. for the majority of his career, he was known as Ron Artest, so I'm going to refer to him as Ron Artest. He was mostly known for playing with the Indiana Pacers and the Los Angeles Lakers. Won a championship with us in 2010, so that was fun. But he was a hard defender, and he would talk a lot of shit. And not only that, he was known for the many fist fights he would get into on the court. And then, of course, he was known for the malice in the palace, you know, when Detroit Pistons versus Indiana Pacers, which is already a heated rivalry, especially at this time. The Pistons and the Pacers, they were getting into it. They got into a physical altercation. Ron Artest basically kind of was walking away from the situation. Then he went and laid on the bench, the announcer's bench, and then a Detroit Pistons fan threw a drink on him, and then from there, he just went on into the crowd. He started punching people. People started punching him. Then people started running on the court, and yeah, it was insane. But, I mean, as far as on the court, he was known for throwing punches on the court. He was known for getting in your ear, talking some shit. He was known for playing some hard-nosed defense, and that was what he was known for throughout his entire career. He did calm down a little bit as he got older, especially when he was with the Lakers. He didn't really get into too many tussles, but he always had that edge. He was always a dirty player. I loved Ron Artest, as a matter of fact, not just because he was a Laker. I actually liked him before he was a Laker. I think it sucks that his legacy basically is the malice in the palace, but also at the same time, maybe he shouldn't have gone running up into the stands punching people. Also, that stupid fan shouldn't have been throwing the drink on him as well. I hate when fans think they're big-time tough motherfuckers and try and get at and talk shit to athletes on the court. They're just there to entertain. Get the fuck over yourselves. That's number four on my top five dirtiest NBA players. We're on our test. Then at number three is Dikembe Mutombo. Now, I don't think a lot of people would put him on there because he's known for being a very nice diplomatic guy. He's known for when he blocks, he, you know, wags his finger in your face. He's most known for, of course, playing with the Houston Rockets. He had a very stellar career. But here's the thing about Dikembe Mutombo. That dude would throw them bows. And not only would he throw them bows, but he would fuck a motherfucker up with those bows. And it just so happens, throughout his career, he actually caused 25 different injuries because of those elbows. And I actually have them listed off here for you. Let me go ahead and tell you what Dikembe Mutombo did in these 25 instances. First, starting off in November 29th of 1991, he injured Ricky Pierce, 12 stitches in the forehead. December 28th, 1991, Robert Parrish hit the floor. December 30th, 1993, Chris Webber, Mutombo later ejected for taunting Chris Gatling. April 10th, 1994, Robert Horry hit in the head, fell to the floor. October 22nd, 1996, Michael Jordan bloodied nose in a preseason game. January 4th, 1997, Charles Oakley, 4 stitches to the lip. I just had Charles Oakley on my dirtiest players list, by the way. January 30th, 1997, Antoine Carr knocked senseless. April 12th, 1997, Tom Gugliotta, broken nose. May 6th, 1997, Dennis Rodman, another dirty-ass player who might be making an appearance in this top five list in a couple picks here. But basically, against Dennis Rodman, he retaliated and was ejected with a second technical foul. March 4th, 1999, Kevin Willis, injured shoulder, missed several games. April 9th, 1999, Chris Childs lost a tooth. Marcus Camby shot to the throat. Larry Johnson hit in the head. And Patrick Ewing hit in the head. Yes, that is 4 different major shots in one game. Then May 8th, 1999, Christian Laettner cut on the face. May 8th, 1999, Lindsey Hunter, left eye. May 4th, 1999, Mark Strickland, broken nose. February 6th, 1999, Jason Williams, broken nose. December 28th, 2000, Chauncey Billups hit in the mouth. 4 stitches, fractured front tooth. January 13th, 2001, Corey Maggette, eye trauma. February 26th, 2001, Ray Allen, broken nose. May 6th, 2001, Chris Childs, broken nose. May 16th, 2001, Vince Carter hit in the head. Carter did not return for the game. February 4th, 2002, Vince Carter hit in the gut. May 31st, 2003, Yao Ming hit in the throat. Mutombo was given a flagrant foul. And then number 25, April 20th, 2004, Kenyon Martin hit in the eye and retaliated by clubbing Mutombo across the arm and received a technical foul. So yeah, Dikembe Mutombo was a dirty-ass player, even though you probably wouldn't think so, but that list alone, he fucked some motherfuckers up, and you know he enjoyed that shit. All right, and then number two on my top five dirtiest NBA players, Dennis Rodman. He's most known for playing with the Detroit Pistons Bad Boys team, and then also the Chicago Bulls. So those are the most notable, but he kind of became a journeyman towards the end of his career. But he was one of the most physical players in the paint. He would throw those elbows anytime he could. He would do whatever it took to get rebounds. He would do whatever it took to just be the most dominant guy in the paint. And he was just known for being, like, you did not want to go in the middle. And if you did, be prepared for some Dennis Rodman elbows to the face. Then at number one on my top five dirtiest NBA players of all time, he was who I thought of immediately when I first thought of this list. I don't think there's anybody who should be, who shouldn't be number, or I mean, I don't think there's any other selection you can make for number one on this list, and that's Bill Laimbeer. He was played with the Detroit Pistons and the Bad Boys team, most notably with Dennis Rodman, and they were one of the most physical teams you have ever seen in basketball history. And Bill Laimbeer, he was that dude. He was that dude who would take the, like, against the Boston Celtics, Larry Bird, one of the greatest NBA players of all time. He, in a finals game, just basically tackled his ass to the ground. And he did get suspended, but that kind of shit didn't matter to Bill Laimbeer. And that's why he's number one on my list, because he gave zero fucks. He knew his goal, and his whole thing was to be the most feared guy on the court. And while he was a solid basketball player, he was known for his physicality, and that's what he was there for. He was there to be the bruiser. He was there to be the asshole. He was there to talk shit. He carried that dirty player title like a badge of honor, just like Charles Oakley did. He loved that reputation. He wanted to fuck you up if you were playing against him. No matter who you were, he didn't care if you were a star. He didn't care if you were a rookie. He didn't care if you had rings. He didn't care if you were a future Hall of Famer. He did not give a shit. And he knew that was his role on the team. He played that role well. And I don't know how anybody, because I'm like the only person, and out of all those articles that I read of their top lists of dirtiest players, they all had Bill Laimbeer on there, and he was either like three or two. But for me, that was like the first motherfucker I thought of when I first started thinking of this list. I'm like, it's got to be Bill Laimbeer. Come on, man. I mean, he's like when you think of dirty player, he's the definition of dirty player. And like I said, that's a compliment coming from me. That's he was a spectacular player, but he was dirty as hell. And so yeah, notice Draymond Green didn't make that list. Even though he is a dirty player, but I don't think he could touch at least those five. At least those five. Even though Draymond is a great player, because I know people were dissing earlier this week, and it kind of pissed Draymond off that talking about the older generations of basketball players, how they like to act like they were tougher and blah blah blah. But and that he could match up against anybody, and I'm sure he could, but. This top five list, I don't think Draymond's as dirty as these five. So enjoy the weekend of we got game four of the NBA finals tonight. Then we've got a bunch of baseball this weekend. We've got the college baseball, got pro baseball, got some UFC in there as well. So yeah, enjoy the weekend of sports. Like I said, if you're in the Austin area and you can make it out tomorrow to the Bars, Jars, and Cigars Festival at the Texas Music River Ranch, everything kicks off at 9 a.m., runs all day, all the way to 2 a.m. Sunday morning. And like I said, I go on at 1:20, so if you want to come on out, have a good time, come on out, y'all. And I will talk to you all on Monday.